My name is Shobha Shivashankar. It's a tough name, the last name, but Shobha is what I'm known as. And I'm going to be talking about dryland cereals in particular, and the relationship to climate change and the public-private partnerships that have been evolving in dryland cereals in the CG centers that they've been worked on. So this is mostly about the CGIAR research program on dryland cereals. That's part of the CG reform process that's ongoing. And it's a global alliance for improving food security, nutrition, and economic growth for the world's most vulnerable poor. And it deals with four crops, barley through Ikada, and then finger millet, pearl millet, and sorghum through ICRISAT, which is in India, potentially Hyderabad, India. And it addresses these crops in sub-Saharan Africa, in India, and in Central and Western Asia. And it's a big partnership. All of the partners are not mentioned here, but we are funded by the Bill and Gates, Melinda Gates Foundation, USAID. And the partners are both research and development partners, which includes the SMIL Lab, the Sorghum and Millets Innovation Lab in Kansas State University, as well as several other groups. There's also the CGR, other CGR research programs that we interact with very much, because to enable us to be functioning along the continuum that starts from plant crop improvement all the way through to seed dissemination and product development. We work together with the other partners in the CG systems that include the dryland systems, which is more of an NRM, natural resource management play, the climate change group, gene banks for germplasm, livestock and fish for some of the dual purpose uses of the crops that we are working on, agriculture for nutrition and health, which is A4NH for the nutritional benefits of the crop, water, land and ecosystems for water management, and then grain legumes for intercropping and rotation together with the dryland cereal crops. So why these crops? These crops are climate hardy and micronutrient dense cereals. So as most of you know, these are the most resilient of the cereal crops, tolerating high temperatures and also extremes in environmental conditions such as drought. Sorghum is also tolerant to waterlogging, short-term waterlogging. These crops are also micronutrient-rich, especially rich in micronutrients like iron and zinc, that is high in crops like pearl millet. And in the case of finger millet, there is a very high level of calcium that is way higher, sevenfold higher than the other crops, other cereal crops. The crops are grown by most of the poor people in sub-Saharan Africa, in Asia, and it caters as staple crops to 650 million people. And the demand for food, feed, and other uses are projected to increase over the next several years. Currently, these crops on an average are used for human food at the level of 40%, for animal feed 50%, and then there are emerging end uses for these crops that include biofuels, beverages, and nutraceuticals. So the vision and mission of the program is to improve food security, nutrition, income, and resilience for smallholder agriculture in dryland regions of Africa and Asia through collaborative partnership. And as I said before, it spans the entire regime of crop improvement, crop management, post-harvest technologies, and market access. And I just put this map up from the World Bank World Development Report on climate change and development. And this is just to show, based on maize, the yield decreases over the next 50 years, next 40 years, that goes across the world in terms of yield reduction under climate change. And most of this yield reduction is happening in sub-Saharan Africa, South America, in different parts of the world. And for our crops, these crops overlay to some extent the regions that are highlighted in red and lighter red colors in the previous graph. primarily because of the nature of these crops that grow in extreme climate environments and also in poorly degraded soils of sub-Saharan Africa and in the dryland regions of Asia. So the program focuses on these crops based on these crops and the target countries based upon two major factors. One is the presence of these crops above 0.5 million hectares in these countries, and the second is a population that depends upon this crop that is high, and it is below $1.25 to $2 per day earnings. So that's how these selections have been made for the countries that we are currently targeting these crops. So as mentioned before, we go from one end of the continuum to the other, and so the delivery pipeline of the program takes into consideration priority setting and foresight planning, which also includes a component of crop modeling in there to go into socioeconomic impact analysis and foresight modeling for the crops and the regions that they are grown in. The second one is the improved varieties and hybrids, which is the primarily the breeding play that we have. And it focuses on yield enhancement and stability using a variety of approaches, and it includes a targeted improvement of yield towards food, feed, and fodder quality, as well as dual purpose, and also abiotic and biotic stress resistance. It addresses phenotyping protocols, crop improvement, and screening measures, and the material that have come out of the program and continues to be worked on includes materials that have increased tolerance to heat, such as pearl millet, improved quality of micronutrients, as in the case of both pearl millet and finger millet, and also in the case of sorghum, to some improvement in micronutrient. Throughout there is also functional stay grain screening for improved tolerance to grain filling stress and later stage drought stress. Just talking about a snapshot of the kind of research that goes on in the breeding platform, which is the second one. The third one is integrated crop management, and this is in collaboration with the Resilient Dryland Systems Program, and this includes both watershed management and water conservation measures alongside of micro-irrigation, conservation agriculture, and through that, adaptation to climate change. And then the fourth one is seed systems and input services that takes care of seed quality, seed multiplication, and dissemination. And finally, post-harvest value and output markets. Throughout the entire continuum, there is also a focus on gender equity in terms of gender preferences in crop breeding, crop management, and the kind of varieties that are released, as well as post-harvest measures that are used for processing. As I said before, there's research partnerships and also development partnerships, and a plan over about 9 to 12 years of delivery, and the research reaching a certain number of farmers during that period of time. Now, in order to go from subsistence, where most of our farmers are, all the way through to market-oriented agriculture, there are two different areas that ICRISAT, ICADA, and partners have been focusing on even before the start of this program and now continuing into this program. And the first one is variety adoption constraints, which as an example, for sorghum in sub-Saharan Africa, the lack of quality and quality assured seed has been the most important constraint for adoption, as are several other constraints, including low yield, pest and diseases, low soil fertility, poor straw yield quality, grain quality, all of that. So to be addressing that in the breeding program become very, very critical. While addressing the breeding program for crop improvement to address some of these constraints, it's also necessary to make sure that the seed dissemination part is taken care of. And that is where public-private partnerships have come into supporting the dissemination through ICRISAT and in ICADA to some extent. And the second part is market-oriented development for smallholder farmers. And market-oriented development is basically, you know, anything that goes into the market for a product has a demand and supply that is involved. In this case, when we're looking at smallholders and to be having inclusive market-oriented development, there needs to be, from the subsistence, a demand pull that actually increases the supply as offers a chance for the smallholder agriculturists to increase the supply to move them from subsistence into market-oriented agriculture. So from this point, I'm just going to be talking about a few examples, primarily focusing on some of the work by ICADA and ICRISAT, and also some successes that have come out of that. And I'll wrap up with a summary of the critical challenges and where we are currently. So the strategic public-private partnerships for seed dissemination and end-use markets are the highest priority within this program, or highest most effort is going into these within the program. There are a variety of research partnerships that I'm not talking about, and that involves both soil management aspects and also crop improvement aspects. Shown on the left is feed barley that grows from hydroponics to seeds and other feed materials, and also on the right there is food barley, and the program within ICADA that focuses on barley is involved in breeding material for hydroponic barley, that is sprouted barley for feed, and also to be helping with processing facilities that go into food barley value chain. There is also a small malt barley partnership that has recently been started. There is a commitment predominantly on smallholder agriculture and smallholder farmers, and this has just started pilot germplasm testing in 2013-14 in Morocco. And then I talk a little bit about the Hybrid Parent Research Consortium and seed dissemination at ICRISAT. This has been going on for a while now. It started in the year 2000, and this is where ICRISAT actually conducts the basic research and produces the breeding material that goes into partners, including both public and private partners, for development into open-pollinated varieties that can be disseminated, or to hybrids that can be disseminated to farmers. It's the companies that actually make the selections and select the useful parental lines, and they make the hybrid parent combinations and then test to choose promising hybrids for niche markets and disseminate those. So smallholder farmers get access to high-yielding varieties or hybrids through this partnership. This partnership has played significantly in hybrid pearl millet productivity gains in India. Now, if you look at the gains from early 1950 to 65 all the way through to 2012, during the early part, during the 50 to 65 period, it was mostly open-pollinated varieties, and then hybrids started coming in 66, 80, and then the steep curve after that, 81 to 95, is actually because of the improvement of downy mildew resistance in the germplasm that got incorporated into the breeding programs. And then that ramped up significantly from 96 to 2012. And so this has been the productivity increases through this HPRC consortium, where breeding material is developed by the CG Center and then included through this consortium and supplied to public and private partners to disseminate. Now, this is a good story just looking at the productivity, but if you look at the total area over time in India, has reduced as productivity increased. A similar trend is seen in sorghum productivity gains in India. There was a steep increase during the period from 1970 to 1989, and then that slope has actually gone down a little bit. And this is again because of the reducing area under rainy season sorghum that went primarily into food uses for India. And this tailed off into post-rainy sorghum that still does not have hybrid seed production, and it's still dependent upon open-pollinated varieties, and that primarily feeds the fodder market or dual-purpose market in India. And this is a little bit of a busy slide, but it just shows the large number of varieties and breeding materials that have been supplied through ICRISAT in the case of pearl millet and sorghum, and also the number of public and private entities that have been involved in the consortium since the year 2006 all the way through to 2012. The HPRC success story in India now stands at, or in 2012, stood at 60% of 110 pearl millet hybrids that are sold in India are based upon ICRISAT bred lines, and 50 more are in the pipeline. And 56% of 55 sorghum hybrids sold in India are based on ICRISAT germplasm, and 8 are in the pipeline. And there is a wide diversity of the material that have been supplied for breeding breeding development and seed dissemination to both the public and the private sector. Now, the HPRC model in the private-public partnerships that involves ICRISAT, which is a CG center that works for public good, and then with the industry or the private sector, which actually has the added thing about intellectual property, comes into the picture, has been functioning well based on this particular model, where each company contributes a minimal nominal fee annually to become a member of the consortium, and then during the course of the membership, they actually donate additional amount if they feel that's warranted or if they want to do it. And then the number of contributing companies have increased from 9 to 50 now, and even beyond that. And the funds from the consortium members augment the ICRISAT core resources for research. And there is no exclusivity for consortia partners, and that is where the catch comes, but it has been functioning for the last 14 years successfully. And the material is made available freely to public sector institutions. Now, the next part of the equation is from breeding and seed dissemination to food agribusiness incubation and food process development. Food processing development. So the HPRC model was taken a step further to the agribusiness and innovation platform at ICRISAT, which has three components: the agribusiness incubation, innovation and partnership, and NutriPlus knowledge. And this is based upon the inclusive market-oriented development, which is to harness markets in ways that include the poor, and then reinvest the gains in innovations that move smallholder development, and then manage risks for the poor, building resilience. And so the agribusiness incubation at ICRISAT has an inclusive development that has spanned and is spanning innovative ventures, seed ventures, biofuel ventures, farm ventures, and agribiotech ventures. In India, based upon the request of the Government of India and based upon the request of the ICAR, Indian Council of Agricultural Research, 22 agribusiness incubators have been set up across the country, and this is kind of handheld by the ICRISAT business incubator to help it through the process. And this model has been now taken to the South-South initiative from India to Africa, where we have now six value chain-based agribusiness incubators that is mostly led by FARA, UniBrain, the Forum for Agricultural Research in Africa, and then it's supported by Danish government. And then, now, all of this does not deal with just sorghum and millet. It's a wide array of crops and other value chains that are included here. And then we've also started five food processing business incubators in Africa under the India-Africa Forum Summit and the Ministry of Food Processing Industries in India. And this is actually taking the products of smallholder agriculture and pulling the demand in such a manner that there is a supply that follows suit, and making the conditions good for the supply to bring the smallholder farmers into farmer cooperatives and supply it into the demand chain, and thus thus increase their profitability and move from subsistence to market-oriented agriculture. And the last one that I wanted to talk a little bit about is the ICRISAT Development Center for Upscaling, with the example of Poochedana. And this Development Center for Upscaling is based upon a different model, but that is actually depending upon the Government of India's recent requirement for 2% corporate service CSR, corporate social responsibility, corporate social responsibility that goes 2% each into supporting supporting efforts in public sector institutions. And this particular effort started this year. ICRISA Development Center, IDC, started this year, and within the year, it is now at a portfolio of about 34 million, which looks at a variety of things, including water harvesting and watershed management, which is based upon the example of Puchedana in one of the states in India, Karnataka. And then it also focuses on increased productivity, better farm management, micronutrient utilization, and a variety of other things. And all of the things that come out of the agribusiness platform in incubators and innovation platforms are also charted to go, if successful, into upscaling through the IDC platform. So in summary, the public-private partnerships are important for smallholder agriculture to move from subsistence to market-oriented agriculture. Emphasis in such partnerships necessarily need to be on inclusiveness if our goal of improving smallholder agriculture is to be met. The successful models of public-private partnerships exist but could evolve with the changing times. Business incubators and small and medium enterprises provide the earliest opportunities for market-oriented smallholder development in emerging markets. Intellectual property versus public good remains to be resolved or remains to be addressed addressed on a case-by-case basis as we move forward. Finally, I'd like to acknowledge all of the people that I got these slides from and all of the people behind the work in the CGR research program, not including the wide variety of partners that I showed in the earlier slides. Thank you.